From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2014 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here at Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host. Very glad you guys can be with us this afternoon. Got a very interesting topic for you, one I think that's very important for us to listen to and think about. And to begin the program, I want to ask you to put a mental image in your mind. It might give you a little bit of clue what we're talking about. Okay, image number one. Think about a pirate. He's got the patch over his eye. Probably you've seen the pirate movies where they have the peg leg, they have the Captain Hook arm. That's one image. Got that in your mind? Okay. Now we're going to jump ahead to today's athlete that is running down the track in one or two specially made legs or an arm for some other function like that. That's the difference between amputation and amputees a long time ago and where we are today. And that's the topic for today's program, amputees. And I have several guests in the studio with me here today. I want to introduce them to you, beginning with Scott Burton. He's the president and founder of ABLE, which is the Amputees Beyond Life's Expectations, which is a support group for all amputees in Arkansas. And his Facebook site is facebook.com/ableamputees, and I'll put that on our website. Scott, glad to have you here today.
Thank you for having us today, Phil.
And then also with us here is Danny Smith. He's a building contractor in Hot Springs and an ambassador for ABLE in the Hot Springs area, who is heading up a new support group there in that area. And he's an amputee below the knee back in 2008 from a construction accident. Danny, glad to have you here too.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Also is Melinda Spivey. She lost her leg back in 1979 above the knee, and she's with the Hot Springs Pharmacy. Melinda Spivey, glad to have you here, too.
Well, thank you for having me.
And then finally, Nicole Teague. She's the public relations representative for Felix Limb and Brace there in Hot Springs, and she's helping Danny get their support group organized. And her company is associated with many of the other companies in our area of amputee coalitions. And there are several in the area, but if you've noticed, I've mentioned Hot Springs today a couple of times. Of course, those of you who listen to the program know I'm from Hot Springs. And I'll tell you why we're doing this program. Danny and Scott were in Hot Springs about a month ago, weren't you? A month and a half ago. And they were trying to set up their very first meeting of amputees in the area to try and get a support group going. I was invited along with my better half, Dr. Sarah Sullivan, who's with the VA there in Hot Springs. And as I listened to their meeting with the people who were there, I thought, the rest of the state needs to hear this. And there are probably many, many amputees in our listening audience who need support, who have been able to give support to others, who maybe are facing amputation. And I thought this would be a good time to talk about that. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And let me begin first with you, Scott Burton. Tell us a little bit about what ABLE is.
Well, I'm glad you asked. ABLE is an organization that started from really us wanting to help amputees, new amputees, reach out and network with what we call seasoned amputees or people that have had their prosthesis for a while. My real job is with Horton's Orthotics and Prosthetics. And when I was learning about prosthetics, I was seeing that a lot of the patients there were asking the same questions over and over and over. And when we were answering the questions, it occurred to me that, you know, we have both of our legs, we have both of our arms, and we can only answer the questions as we've been told from other amputees. And so I thought, well, why don't we try to connect the two together and let them share with each other what's going on? Because if it hasn't happened to you, you haven't gone through it, you don't know. You think you know, but you don't know. That kind of started it. We wanted to have a place for them to network together, but also friends to call when they're down, friends to call when they don't understand what's going on, you know, if a doctor speaks over their head, or it could be just anything. We wanted to give them a place to feel at home, and so that's basically where it started from.
And ABLE is both in Little Rock now and or North Little Rock?
Yeah, it's funny how it's worked out. In Little Rock, people don't want to go to North Little Rock. They don't want to cross the river. And people in North Little Rock don't want to go to Little Rock. So I don't know what it is about the bridges or the river, but nonetheless, it's created an opportunity for us to have the meetings both in Little Rock and in North Little Rock, which is good because, you know, we can see more people. And then, of course, my friend Nicole, in just our everyday conversations, I was telling her about Able and about a fundraiser that we were doing. And she said, well, you know, we've been talking about that over in Hot Springs. And then that's how Danny got involved. And so then the ball's just been rolling ever since.
Well, how many are in your groups up here?
Typically, they're small. I'd say, on average, anywhere from 5 to 8 people. Amputees, and then they'll bring brothers, sisters, parents, spouses.
How long have you been doing it up here?
We had our first meeting probably about a year and a half ago, close to 2 years ago. And then we, of course, applied for our 501c3, and we got it in February. So it's taken a little while to do that, go through that whole process.
Let me slide over to Danny Smith there. Danny, when you told me about the group and we got to talking about doing that, to be honest with you, I'm probably like 95%, 99% of the people in the audience who may know an amputee, may not know an amputee, but has no real knowledge of what it takes or what you've gone through. Tell me a little bit about first your accident and then how it led to you guys starting Able down there.
Well, in September 18th of 07, my ladder fell out from underneath me. I fell and crushed my ankle real bad. Continued to go through several surgeries, and things just wasn't working out, and I just cannot be sitting in one place for very long. And so you watch a lot of TV, you see a lot of people in the street, and I never paid attention to how many amputees is really in Arkansas, you know, or in Florida, all the place I've ever been. You never notice them. It's kind of like buying a car, thinking you're the only one got this color, and as soon as you drive off the lot, you see 7 more, you know. Well, I finally was just frustrated with going through all the surgeries and told them, hey, take my leg off. You know, I'd done a lot of research, seen a lot of people that had been through surgeries for 3 and 4 and 5 years and then end up losing their leg, you know. And me, I mean, I'm an outgoing type person. I mean, I had peace with it. I mean, I was ready to move on to a new chapter, and I knew I could do it. And so they took my leg off, and I had a lot of questions like Scott was talking about, but there was no support group. I had nobody to ask. I didn't really know any amputees, you know, and so I talked to Brian there at Felix, and Brian talked down, you know, talked to me in a way that I could understand, and a lot of it made sense, but some of it's just things that without a support group, you kind of just have to learn on your own, you know, and of course, by the time you learn it, you don't have to ask nobody, but at the same time, if we would have had a support group like this going on, I could have picked the phone up. I could have called Scott. I could have called Nicole. I mean, I could have called Melinda. I could have called any of these people that we now have in our support group, you know, and said, hey, I'm having this going on. Have you ever went through this? Or what's the next step for me? You know, because I'm really anxious. I'm ready to get a leg. I'm ready to go fishing or hunting. Whatever you like to do, I was ready to do it. But now that, thank God, you know, Scott started this and Nicole and Brian and everybody jumped on board, you know, to start another chapter of Able. It's not that I need questions answered, but I know all the things that I thought about and all the questions I need answered. I know there's thousands more people out there that's got the same questions, going through the same struggles in life. And thanks to you, Phil, you know, for having this program, hopefully we reach those 1,000 people and let them know that, hey, you can come to North Little Rock, you can come to Little Rock, you can come to Hot Springs, or you can pick up a phone and just call one of us. Sunday, I went and visited a man in National Park Hospital, just had his leg cut off. He asked me 10 questions, the same questions that I had back when I was going through it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the first thing I did was smile, because it just makes you feel good knowing the things that we all talked about in our first meetings. It's true. I mean, those people are there and they need help. And the one thing that I'd really like to stress before I forget about it is, if you're a seasoned amputee and you think, I don't need a support group, you may not need a support group, but there's those 1,000 people, somebody every day getting a limb amputated that needs you. Please come to these support groups. Find one of them and come.
You know. Well, let me get both of these. First, Andy, when is the meeting in Hot Springs?
We meet every third Thursday of the month at Perkins at 6:30.
And this will be the second meeting for that chapter. What about you, Scott?
We've been meeting the third Thursdays as well, opposite months in Little Rock, and then we're just starting in North Little Rock, so it should be we're shooting for the same time frame. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to check on our Facebook page, really, because we're having a hard time with the venue for a whole bunch of various reasons. So we don't have a Perkins in Little Rock that I'm aware of. So anyway, we've had challenges.
So they but y'all's more than welcome to come to Hot Springs.
Hey, I'm
glad they got great pies there.
For sure they do that. Absolutely. But we are posting it on our Facebook page so that we'll get the word out to people.
Okay.
Sure.
And, of course, those of you listening, I'll have information from them that I'll put on our site at yttshow.org and also through kuar.org. Let me jump over, Melinda, and go to Nicole Teague. Nicole, tell me the work that you do with people as they're facing amputation or they've gone through it.
More than anything, listening to Scott some and just finding out what he was doing here in Little Rock, trying to get it started there in Hot Springs, it's something just brand new. But we're wanting to have patients that are about to go have surgery done, have some of the amputees go in and speak with them. The other night when we had our meeting, one man spoke up and said, if I could ask for anything, it was someone that had experienced this the night before I went through surgery. And so we're wanting to let people know that before they have surgery, they do have someone to talk to.
And with Felix, I know there's many companies that do what Felix does, but what in a broad sense is available to people as they're looking at amputation?
Various things. I mean, that the process after the surgery, really, having their house set up and ready. And that would be something that Danny's going through right now. He's helping some of the people mm-hmm. get ready for the get their houses prepared. So that's one thing that we're trying to do the support group with.
And if there is anybody out there, Phil, you know, that might have been an amputee for a long time, or some of us over time, the older we get, I mean, we end up in wheelchairs. I mean, we just don't have the strength anymore to walk, which hopefully that never happens to me. But, I mean, it inevitably does, you mm-hmm. know. There is people out there to help you. I mean, and you can always contact Scott or Nicole or any, you know, to if you need my number for some help in that aspect.
Well, and I want to add something to that too, Danny. And Phil, one of the things that you were asking about as far as putting the group together, when somebody goes through an amputation and they obviously have quite a bit of healing to do on their incision site and their residual limb, oftentimes it can take 8 weeks, 12 weeks before they're ready to be fit for a prosthesis. In that time, a lot of times they're in a wheelchair. So like what Danny's saying, even if it's a short-term problem where you've got to go up and down steps to get into your house and you need a wheelchair ramp, that's something that Danny's helping with. And so that's something that we can probably help with. Past that, also they've got 12 weeks of healing time where they don't feel like getting around very much. They may be stuck in their bed watching TV, which I don't know about you guys, but I can't do that. And so in order to keep from going stir crazy, the support group can give people a way to reach out again to people that have gone through the same thing that can take them out to get something to drink or get something to eat or go just drive around or do something. So it's a whole lot more than just, you know, your stereotypical support group where you sit around in a circle and everybody talks about how bad things are. It's really uplifting and it's really encouraging. And I think that in seeing somebody that's gone through an amputation that doesn't slow down at all,
it's amazing.
It's mm-hmm. amazing to see, but it also helps people see, you know, after this heal time that I go through, look at all the life that's left in me. Look at all the things that I can do. I'm not one of Oscar Pistorius's quotes was on our Facebook page for a long time, and it's that you're not disabled by your disabilities, but rather you're able by your abilities. And I think it's a great quote, and I think it's uplifting.
Oh, it's super.
And mm-hmm. and I think it rings true with the group.
I had mentioned in our support group the first time, working with Felix just for a few days, walking back to the back and seeing Brian with a leg with the Tom shoe on it. I knew that we did braces. I knew that we did prostheses, but I wasn't really sure what yet because they were training me. He was like, it's a person's leg. She's going to come pick it up today. I didn't see her come in, but I saw her leave. And when I saw her leave, I was like, she was like waving at everyone. And she was like, see y'all later. She was like, I'm better than ever. And she was literally just like bouncing out. She said, I just want to thank y'all. And I was like, wow. She was happy. I mean, it was the most I mean, it was just heart. I mean, it touched my heart then, and I knew that that's when I had told Scott. I was like, I want to help these guys. We were in a newspaper article, I guess, 2 weeks ago on a Monday, and I got a phone call at about 8:15 in the morning, and it was from a man that I didn't even know the article was coming out that Monday, and he said, he told me who he was, and he said, my wife needs Abel's help. And I said, well, how did you hear about us? And he said, I read it on the front page of the paper this morning. He said, it's her birthday today, and I went to wish her happy birthday, and she said, I've just given up on life. Please, can you help us?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, absolutely. And I got a hold of one of the seasoned amputees, and she made a phone call, and he called me that evening and thanked me. And since then, I think that she's been getting a lot of support. And
speaking of seasoned amputees, now I want to bring Melinda Spivey into the discussion. As I mentioned in the introduction, she lost her leg back in 1979, and although she's not an old lady by any means, that's a long time ago to be going through the amputation process. And I want to get into some of the aspects about amputation. But Melinda, tell everybody about your situation. I know you lost a leg. From what you heard these guys talk about, how does that fit in with what you went through at that time?
Well, mine is a kind of a different situation. I lost my leg to cancer. And when they found my cancer, fortunately, National Institutes of Health in Maryland was doing research on the type of cancer I had. So I flew to Maryland and went through my amputation there, and I had a lot of support there. You know, like I said, they were researching it, so there were other amputees that had just lost their legs for the same reason I did. They would come, they came in and would talk to me about it before it happened, so I got to realize or understand some of what I might be going through. And then also, once you went through it, when other new patients came in, they would ask you to go in and speak to them. So I had a lot of support, and I know how important it is. And I've just recently become aware of ABLE, and I'm just recently learning everything about it, and I'm hoping to be a part of it and hoping that I can help somebody like I was helped.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you went to Maryland to do this, apparently they must have already been clued in to what was necessary for people facing what medical reasons for amputation. Is that right? Because they had something, they'd already told you what to expect and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
Well, prior to you going there, did you know much at all about what you were facing?
I had no clue because it happened so fast. I went to a doctor in Vicksburg. They found the tumor. About 2 to 3 days later, I was in Maryland. They did a biopsy, and 3 or 4 days after that, they took my leg.
And so, then what?
And then, and like I said, they had amputees that came in and talked to me, and they let me know what to expect, the difficulties of it, and.
Okay, but you came back home.
Yes.
What was it like back in 79 when you came home, and then going into those next, say, the next 10 years or so, how did you respond to having to deal with amputation then?
Back then you didn't see, or I didn't see a lot of amputees. I didn't know any other amputees where I lived. The hardest thing for me was trying to make other people understand that I was still the same person. I just didn't have a leg. And, you know, to be honest about it, I lost a lot of friends, but then I made a lot of friends. And
Well, Melinda, you're actually very important to the discussion as we're talking here today for people listening who have been an amputee maybe many decades ago. I'm thinking of things that we probably normally think about in terms of war veterans from World War II and things like that. Those are the people, and you among them, who have faced a society that was probably different than today's society. What do you see different now than what you saw when you were younger?
Well, now you see a lot more amputees around, and you know, you realize that you're not the only one. I felt like I was the only one, honestly. And
so you had no support group when you got home?
No, not at home. And it's hard. You know, I'm not going to lie about it. It's hard. And, you know, you have the stares that make you more self-conscious, or the little whispers that you hear. And, you know, it's a hard thing to go through, but if you can pick yourself up and just make yourself face every day and say, hey, I'm still here, I'm alive, I might not have a leg, but I'm here, then you find a way to deal with everything, and you just keep pushing yourself until you know, you show yourself, not only yourself, but everybody else, that you're still a productive person in society, and no reason for you to be more or less put on a back burner and forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I know that when you came into the studio today, you're on crutches. You don't have a prosthesis
No.
Have you had one in the past?
I wore a prosthetic for about probably 13 to 15 years, and I'm an above-the-knee amputee, and my amputation is high, and it makes for a harder fit with a prosthetic. And I've had several made through the years, but to be honest about it, a lot of they're just too painful to wear.
So those are the reality of amputation that, again, a support group could help out with. Danny, you've been in yours, what, three now? No, how many years now?
Since 08.
What about the pain elements for you compared to what she's talking about?
I still have what they call phantom pains, and I mean, those can range anywhere from a little tingling to feels like your foot's asleep, which you don't have your foot anymore, but it feels like your foot's asleep, and sometimes you can multiply that up to 25 times.
See, at times, to me, it feels like somebody's taking a sledgehammer and just slamming it on your foot or in your heel or the back of your leg. Or.
And, you know, the very first phantom pain I ever had was the night when my anesthesia wore off after I had my leg cut off. And it felt like somebody poured hot molten steel on my leg. And I jerked my leg straight up in there, and that was the first time I actually seen what my leg looked like without a foot being down there. But the pain went right away. So the whole time, with not having a support group, you know, like we've got started now, to ask questions, all that's going through my mind is, when is that pain coming back? You know, I mean, that's all I thought about. For weeks, I thought about that. Never had another one.
Isn't there some medication that can be prescribed that
Well, I do. I actually take Neurontin, okay. Which is one of them. I think Lyrica is a form of another one, you know. And it's like any other medication. What works for me may not work for Melinda, but, you know, vice versa. The Neurontin, I take one in the morning, one at lunch, and now I actually take one and a half at night. But it's just because I'm so active. I don't give my leg the rest that you probably need to rest a little bit. I just can't do it. The Neurontin helps with the nerve pain, the tingling and the phantom pains and stuff. And I'm not saying Neurontin takes them all away. But if I had to go through a day without it, I can't sleep without it. So, I mean, if anybody's out there listening to the show and, you know, an amputee and they're having problems sleeping, it feels like your leg's crawling or having any pains, I mean, talk to your doctor. I mean, that's what they're there for. You know, don't just sit back and think, well, that's part of my life now, because it's really not. I mean, you can control this. You know, you can get it to a spot where you can handle everything, mm-hmm. and that's where I'm at now. I mean, and I'm not saying that, I mean, I've went through a lot of the same things Melinda's talking about. I mean, I may get a leg, and it feels great, and for a year, I'm just going, all of a sudden, I get a little spot come up on my leg. And the best thing to do when you get them spots, go see your orthotic place, you know, and tell them, hey, I got a spot. Don't wait till the spot's done got infected to where they take your leg, they repossess your leg for a week because you won't stay off of it.
But repossess your leg.
Yeah. But at the, you know, I mean, that's in the kidding aspect of it there. But there's things out there, and that's what's great about this support group, to where you have people like Scott and Nicole and Brian and me and, you know, all these people, you know, that you can contact and say, hey, I'm having this issue. You know, what do I need to do about it? I mean, people, mm-hmm. there's literally probably somebody going to listen to this show today and say, hey, I'm having that same problem. I didn't think there was anything you could do for it.
Well, let me come back to you, Melinda. How long have you been dealing with the pain, or did the pain actually go away after?
I still have phantom pains, and like he said, sometimes it can be just a twinge, and at other times, like I said, it can feel like somebody's taking a sledgehammer down on your foot.
Clue me in, because I don't know. Is phantom pain real pain, or is it actually phantom, meaning it's not really a pain, it's something in your mind?
A lot of times, what people don't realize is that when you've got nerves, they run like almost like a fiber optic cable down your leg, and then as it gets to your feet and all that, they get smaller and spread out. When you cut those nerve endings off, you've still got your big bundle, if you will, of the small nerves. And so those nerve endings are now a lot higher up than they were before. So your nerve fiber optic cables, so to speak, are still trying to feel what they were feeling prior to.
I always thought of it as like your brain doesn't realize that part of your body's gone and
exactly.
It's still sending messages, and that when it gets to the end of that nerve, you feel pain wherever that nerve went, is how
exactly.
I always thought.
Yeah.
So it is real pain.
Yes.
Just as if I were to cut myself right now, I'd feel the pain. It's the same pain.
Yes. It's just in a different, it's located in a different spot because of it being severed, whether it be because of an accident or because of surgery or whatever. So,
did you have medications available to you in those times, Melinda?
I prescribed pain medications, but they never worked. I found that if I could keep my hands busy, you know, when my son was little, I'd say, come on, let's color if I was having phantom pains, or I would pick up a crochet needle and crochet or do needlework. Anything to keep my hands busy seemed to help with the phantom pains. It seemed to help ease them.
Have you tried mirror therapy?
No, never heard of it.
There's a type of therapy that some of the occupational therapists or physical therapists use to help with phantom pain, where in a leg, you would sit straight up with your leg straight out in front of you, and you would take a long mirror and put it in between your legs and lean it over the leg that's not there anymore, so that you see with your brain two legs, which in your case, your right leg that you see is really a reflection of your left leg. And so you kind of trick your brain into thinking that you've got two legs. And for some people, that works.
I've never heard of that.
It's a relatively new type of therapy, but obviously, it's not high tech, so if you've got a long mirror at the house, you can try it out.
You know, just in a time I've lost my leg, I've heard of people doing that, and it has helped them. You know, I never tried it. I do know quite a few people that has.
See,
you know?
I was told years ago that, you know, like if your leg that wasn't there itched, that you could scratch the other leg and it would stop it. And sometimes that would help, but not a lot.
I'm kind of curious also, Melinda, you've had the time to go through all this, and what kind of therapies were available to you when you got home? Were you on your own when you got home?
I was more or less on my own. I never had any type of physical therapy or anything after I was home.
And you didn't know any other amputees at the time?
No.
You look at it now, Phil, back then medicine has evolved
so much.
Since they know how to do certain things, they just thought you just keep working and working and working, to where now, you know, doctors have realized, hey, this hadn't worked in the past. They try the new things now, and when it don't work, they realize not only does it save a person from going through several many surgeries and things, you know, when they know it's not going to work now, to where back when Melinda was there, we're talking about 1979.
Now with social media, you can find groups online, and you can be speaking with somebody in Germany that's going through the same stuff, and back in 1979, you didn't have that option.
But there's more and more people today that are new amputees than, probably, I mean, I don't know the statistics. I mean, Scott, you may know, but.
Well, I just happen to have a few statistics here, and I'll throw these in here since you bring that up, Danny. Right now, there's about 1.8 million people in the United States living with amputations, and about 130,000 are performed every year. And this is coming from actually, from the Isaac Law Firm site. I picked it up there. I want to give them credit for putting these statistics out. And most of the amputees are males at the peak age of between 40 and 70. Vascular disease is about 80%. Trauma, about 15 to 20%. And the rest of it is to tumors and congenital problems, is what Melinda's situation there. Let's kind of move into the causes apart, just briefly on causes, because yours was a construction accident.
Yes, sir.
Yours was cancer.
Yes.
What are some of the other causes you guys see? Let me bring you into that, Nicole. What kind of causes do you see that you're having to deal with, why people end up with?
Diabetics and injuries, I mean, really, of all types. The lady that I met for the first time, she'd had a motorcycle accident with her husband. She had lost her leg. He lost his arm.
Well, you said actually the word I knew we'd get into, diabetes, is apparently increased tremendously as it impacts amputations. Is that what you guys are seeing in your practices?
Yeah, diabetes is a huge issue with amputation. And the way that it happens, and a lot of people may not realize that with diabetes, it restricts the blood flow in your extremities, in most cases your feet. And by doing that, it also limits the ability to feel, and so they develop a neuropathy, or they can't feel what they step on. And so they'll rub a blister in their shoe, and they won't know that they have a blister, and then that blister will get infected, and the infection gets so bad that it needs to be amputated. Well, as your statistics said, 80% of amputations are from that.
Nicole?
And so when you mentioned vascular, that's where the vascular part of it comes in, diabetic patients and the vascular issues.
We've talked mainly about leg amputations, but I know that there are all the other amputation possibilities. Is the arm the second one, obviously, I guess, or hand, or what do you guys see?
Well, if obviously breast cancer and mastectomies is a huge, people don't think about that as being an amputation as much as they do a leg or an arm, but it is. And that's a whole different day, and I'm sure a whole different topic, but I would say that that is more so than the arms and the legs. But arms...
More so.
I think so, really? Yeah.
That kind of surprises me.
Well, at least it's more public. It's talked about more. It's, you know, the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure has been huge in promoting women's health and breast health and all of the aspects that go with that. But to answer your question on arms are a totally different than legs in that if you don't have one leg, it's hard to walk. Right. If you don't have one arm, you can still walk. You can still get to from point A to point B. The medical necessity isn't, I'm not going to say it's not as important, but insurance companies don't see it as being as important. And so it's harder to get funded.
That really surprises me that that there's a difference between where you get an amputation.
But I'd like to tell you, though, speaking of arms, I don't know the gentleman's first name. He's missing both arms. He had, and Scott would probably know what they're called, but I mean, kind of like the crab claws on each hand. Probably one of the best fishermen you ever see in your life. He had his rod specially made. Outfish any man in the world that back in the days. You know, he was all over the newspapers and everything like that. You know, but nobody looked at him any different. Mm-hmm. I mean, they almost looked at him as a hero. I mean, because a guy could fish so good, you know, when he was missing both arms. Thanks to technology and stuff of making these prosthetics and things that they make, you know, I mean, there's no telling. I don't keep up with the arm aspect of everything because I'm missing a leg, but I'm sure they have computerized ones and everything for your arms also, right?
Oh, they do, and they've got some that are now starting to tie into your nervous system in that it'll patch into your brain, and if you think, open my hand, it'll open your hand. Twist my wrist, and it'll twist your wrist. Ironically, there's a guy from Hot Springs who is the CEO of a company in New York that's doing research on hand prosthetics, and he developed a really neat hand, kind of a scanner. Imagine a barcode scanner, and put that barcode scanner on your wrist, and various things in your daily activities. So if you go to the microwave every morning, or pick up a coffee cup every morning, or let's say 10 different
brushing
acts
your teeth.
Exactly, that you routinely do, you would program your hand in that position and it would have a barcode. And then you'd move on to the next thing and it would change the position of the hand, and that scanner on the wrist would change the position of the hand accordingly and open it up for a coffee mug, for example.
Wow.
And so here's the part that I didn't think about because I have both of my arms. If you have this hand that's electronic hand and you pick up your coffee cup and you're walking across the room and, I don't know, you see something on TV and you're not thinking about it, that now your hand opens and you'll drop your coffee mug. Well, what this particular product does is it keeps that from happening. It essentially overrides the ability for your brain to work the hand. And so now you're outsmarting your smart hand, so to speak.
It wasn't too long ago on TV. It was one of our vets, and I'd like to also thank all the vets out there today. Mm. I know there's a lot of you guys out there that sacrificed your life for us, and, you know, and lost a leg or an arm or both legs.
Both,
but
yeah.
God bless all you guys. Maybe one day, you know, they'll have it to where we don't have to slide a prosthetic on. They just put you another leg on.
And I'm glad that you brought that up about the vets and war, and as terrible as war is, and I'm certainly thankful, absolutely, it helps in the prosthetic technology.
Exactly.
Because the government, in the government's mind, it is easier and less expensive to replace a leg with a prosthetic leg and take a vet that's combat experienced and knows what they're doing and get them back out in the field than it is to take a new one and train them from day one, and obviously a lot less time.
In preparation for the program, I kind of did something that surprised myself. Last night, I Googled amputee images. And, you know, if you've Googled anything, it'll say images, and you can go through 8 million pages of images. I would invite those of you listening to the program today who either are an amputee or you know somebody is one, or even if you don't, just to be familiar with what is out there. I mean, there are so many images. We've just talked about a few today, arms and legs and that sort of thing, but I was so moved to see all the different images of people who were happy. I saw all these, and that was 99.99% of the images I saw were people who had gone through losing both legs way high or both arms or things like that, and they were smiling. They had some of them had pictures where they would have a prosthetic attached after this other procedure, and very happy, and all of them back involved in life. And I think that's one of the things I was interested in doing this program today, was you guys are starting something that can benefit many of the people listening in our Arkansas audience, and those of you who might be listening through iTunes in whatever state you might be in. You probably should try and see if there's a support group in your area there. Nicole, tell me a little bit more about your visits to doctors and those who are involved with amputees. So what are you finding out from doctors about amputations?
I'm finding out that they're really excited about, even though, like, I might go in and see that a doctor that only has a couple of amputees, they're like, oh, we know someone. They're always so excited to know that this support group is happening. What people need to know is it's not just for the amputee, it's for their families, their family members, their cheerleaders. They need to just as much support. I know that Danny can tell you that his wife has been his biggest cheerleader. Just like the man that called me that morning that read the newspaper, and he was excited. He wanted help on his wife's birthday, but she had been an amputee for 2 years and had not been able to walk yet. I think that it's just an all-around great thing for the amputee and the family in general.
Something that I'd like to stress is attitude. If you're listening to this show and you're looking at to become an amputee, I mean, you're set up for surgery. The fastest way to heal your mind and your body is your attitude. I mean, you got to go into it with a great attitude. And I think the one thing that helped me is I had two young kids. I mean, they were teenagers when this happened to me. And I'd always taught my kids to never give up. And so I knew that no matter how much I was hurting or how down I felt at the time because I couldn't go do something I was wanting to do, whatever, I never let my kids see me put my head down. I always smiled. I was always upbeat around them because no matter what they went through in life, I didn't want them hitting a difficult time in life and saying, hey, Dad gave up, so we can too. To me, that was almost like having a support group right there is my kids being there, you know, and that's going back to what Nicole's saying, you know. My kids, every time I go have a surgery, I'd go to get in a vehicle, my wife would pull a letter out and hand it to me, and it'd be written by my kids. And, of course, I saved all of them, you know, and my son was always, he'd always be the last one. My daughter would write something real sweet, and Dad, I love you. And my son would be like, Dad, don't be a chicken. See you later. You know? Just things like that. And it made you smile, you know. And I mean, I'd always hang them up while I was laying in the hospital. I'd hang those letters up just to encourage. I couldn't wait to get out and go do something with my kids or my wife. And speaking of family, I mean, I got to give all the thanks to my wife. She used every vacation day, every sick day. I mean, she didn't leave my side for 31 days. After my first surgery, I laid in the hospital. I mean, I wake up, she is right there. And I'm sure that there's a lot more amputees out there the same way. And we get bitter sometimes. For all of you spouses that's out there, and you think, well, my husband's being a real butt, or my wife's being a real butt. You know, they lost her leg. I don't know if I can deal with this. Give them a little bit of time. You know, just be there for them. I mean, sometimes we get bitter. I mean, it's new to us, too. So we have to learn how to react to it. The same as you have to learn how to control from hitting us over the head when we're not doing what you want.
This does have an age factor into it that I want to bring back into it. How does age fit into amputation? Is it harder when you're older or easier when you're younger?
I still think that goes back to what you were doing before you lost your leg or lost an arm. From all the people I've talked to since I lost mine, I mean, I know a guy that I just went and talked to the other day, 78 years old. All he kept asking me is, hey, am I going to be able to to walk down by the river and fish again. Well, if he's asking me if he can do that, then there's nothing can stop him. Only you can really stop yourself. I mean, mm-hmm. Scott can probably answer a little more on the lines of what you're saying, but I really think whatever you was doing beforehand to a certain extent, I think you're still going to be able to do them things.
Attitude goes back to what Danny's talking about, attitude. If you were defeated, then you're not going to. But then again, if you have a positive attitude, then absolutely you can do whatever you want to do. So to answer your question specifically on age, obviously diabetes fits in more or is more prevalent in an older demographic. By older, I don't mean older as in old, but as in 45 to 75 or 80. And I've seen people come in. One gentleman came in with an amputation who was 82, and he's getting around now, and his motivation was to drive his old Jeep. He's got a 52 military Jeep that's a standard transmission, and he wants to be able to drive it, and that's his motivation. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm a Jeep guy, so that's a great motivation.
Yeah.
But the heal time is a little slower. Recovery time, as far as once you get a prosthesis, getting around, you know, learning how to do it again, it's a little slower because they're a little more cautious. Because, you know, and I'm sure that Melinda and you too, Danny, you guys have fallen before, I'm sure.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yes.
And so if you're 80 years old, a fall can be a whole lot worse than it is if you're 40 years old.
Or 12.
Yeah. Or 12,
yes,
exactly.
Me falling at 14 when I lost my leg is a lot different than falling at 49.
Exactly. How old were you, Melinda?
I was 14 when I lost my leg.
What was the real question you just asked her, Phil?
How old I was.
Melinda, I think I do want to ask you about the age factor in the years, because you were young at 14 when that happened. And you've had a long time to deal with that. What's been the hardest and the easiest part about dealing with amputation from a long standpoint? What are they looking at?
Well, you're going to have, like he was saying, good days and bad days and everything. And what kept me going, I think, is having my son, you know, because when I had him, then I had to keep going for him. And I just didn't let myself stop. You know, I just did what I had to do in order to raise my child. I mean, I basically did everything that any other parent did, going to the ball games, playing with my son out in the yard. And one of my son's favorite things when he was little was coming in and stealing my crutches and the kids playing with them like they were machine guns out in the yard, and I would have to hop everywhere to try to get them back.
Oh, that's terrible.
To me, it's you do what you have to do or what you need to do and basically what you want to do.
I have a question for you. When did you realize you were over that hump? You're like, I can do this. This is like a normal routine to me now.
I kind of had that attitude all along, really, because like I said, I had when I was in the hospital, I was in there for 3 months the first time, and I had a lot of people that had already gone through it coming and talking to me, and I had a lot of support there. You know, like I said, there's times of depression, but you just have to pick up and keep going, and you just can't let yourself stay there.
Right. I think one of the biggest things is whenever you were in the hospital, and I think with our other amputees that have been in the hospital, knowing that they have a choice of who they talk to about their prosthesis and the process mm-hmm. of going through that, interviewing, making sure that it's the right person. There's a lot of times that the husband that called me that morning, he was frustrated because his wife's leg would not stay on, and he felt frustrated because she'd given up because she didn't have the right support. And I think going into the hospitals and letting everyone know that in the medical field, yes, you go and you talk to your physician, but at the end of the day, you have a choice of who you go to. That's going to be your leg. That's what's going to make you walk. You need to interview, just like interviewing anything else. You need to interview and find out your perfect fit.
Almost like going on your first date.
Right.
You know, I mean, with somebody, I mean, you really don't know as much about that person until you go out with them, you know, and you sit and talk to somebody. I mean, say I was losing my leg tomorrow and go see Scott at his place. Well, if me and him don't have a lot of the same thing in common, or if I don't jive with Scott, then I'm probably not going to be happy there.
Right.
You know, but there's so many other places out there, and I think I agree with Nicole. Just because somebody says you have to go to this place, you don't have to. That's your money. I mean, that's your leg you're going to be wearing. That's the person that you need a personal relationship with. Me personally, I mean, I live in Hot Springs. I went to Felix Lehman Brace and met Brian. Me and him do a lot of the same things, hunt and fish and all that, where both of us like to cut up and have fun. That was a great fit for me.
I think a lot of patients don't realize in any health care that they have a choice. You know, I try to tell patients, try to simplify it. You have a choice in your health care, and you have a choice, and you need to interview and interview well.
Well, recap for me, Scott, here about ABLE and other groups around maybe that you don't know about for people. How do they contact whatever support group is in their area in the case of you guys with ABLE?
Well, so with us, the easiest way to contact us is through our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ABLE amputees. That's the easiest way to get in touch with us. There's the Amputee Coalition of America, which has got a wealth of information.
BottleBot, that's one on Facebook also.
Yeah, that's a good one. Now, AutoBot, for those of you guys who aren't familiar with AutoBot, they make a lot of the components that are used to make a prosthetic leg or arm, and that's a good one too.
So if you're in one of the regions of our state, you can probably find a company that does what you guys do.
Absolutely.
In that area. I'd like to be able to say all their names for those of you who live in those areas, but look them up yourself. Do the work in finding that out. Wrapping up here today, I'd like to tell you folks, if you have missed part of our program and you want to listen to the longer version, go to the website at KUAR.org or at YTTShow.org. You'll find the longer podcast version there, which is going to be close to an hour's worth of programming on the topic of amputees. And, of course, you've just been listening to the shorter half-hour version here today. I do want to thank my guests for being with me here today. Scott Burton, president and founder of ABLE, Amputees Beyond Life's Expectations. Scott, thanks for being here today.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
Danny Smith, a building contractor there in Hot Spring, and he's part of the group that's starting the ABLE support group in Hot Springs. Danny, thanks again.
Hey, Phil, we appreciate it.
Nicole Teague, she's with Felix Brace and Limb. Nicole, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
And then, of course, Melinda Spivey, who lost her leg back in 1979. You've had to deal with this a long time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed the program. Join us next week. Thanks for listening tonight, and we'll see you then. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.